Good evening and Happy New Year. Welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden, and my co-host tonight is Emmy-nominated NBC legal and political analyst, Dean Johnson.
Everyone, you know, Jeff, 2 weeks ago we asked our listeners, are the guardrails coming off of our society? We got a lot of feedback from listeners who were concerned, frustrated, angry, or just plain fed up with conspiracy theories, flash mob thefts, soaring homicide rates, random violence, school shootings, police shootings, and vigilante justice. Our listeners were very clear. They were incensed about rising crime in the Bay Area. And they especially wanted to hear from the people on the front lines in the streets and the courts. So tonight we bring you, Are the Guardrails Coming Off? Part 2. What the bleep is going on in the Bay Area? What's causing this surge in criminal activity? What's being done about it? What can we do about it? And what should we do? Jeff?
As with any area of disagreement, we're sharply divided in our opinions of how we got here. In Part 1, Professor Andy Barlow opined that people as a whole have lost respect for the rule of law. We all agree that the current state of affairs is not sustainable and that we have to get from where we are to a better environment. People sharply disagree on what path to take now. Tonight, we want to extend our personal invitation for you to call in and share your thoughts. Think of this as an on-air brainstorming session or town hall meeting. There's much to discuss, and we've assembled an all-star cast to join you in that conversation. Dean?
So let's tap into the wisdom of the crowds and see whether we can come up with the right questions and some creative solutions.
Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. If you're outside of this local area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. But remember that just like a doctor can't diagnose your family member based on your phone call, our attorney guest can't provide you with the legal advice about a particular case, but they're here to help.
And you wanted to hear from the people in the streets and the people in the courtrooms? Well, tonight we have an all-star panel of guests who face these issues in the streets and in the courtroom every day.
Jeff Rosen is the district attorney for Santa Clara County, heading the San Francisco Bay Area's largest prosecution team, serving a population of nearly 2 million people. Mr. Rosen was not able to join us tonight. However, you will be hearing from him as we recorded an interview with him earlier today. Dean?
San Mateo County Attorney Kevin Allen was the director of the Office of Citizen Complaints of the San Francisco Police Commission, and he was a deputy public defender in San Francisco. He's now in private practice in San Mateo, San Francisco, Santa Clara, and Alameda counties. And Damone Hale is a community activist and attorney out of San Francisco who's been practicing law in San Francisco for over 30 years.
And Alameda County District Attorney Nancy O'Malley heads an office that's focused on doing justice. Ms. O'Malley has focused her energies on such areas as sexual assault, domestic violence, elder abuse, stalking, and human trafficking. To all of our guests, hello, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Dean. This is Kevin. Thank you again for having me. This is such an esteemed group of people. I'm really honored to be here.
And I'm thankful too. It's always good. We don't talk about enough about our community problems, particularly with the people who are on the front lines. And so this is always helpful, and I'm appreciative to be a part of it.
And thank you, Jeff and Dean. I'm very happy to be here.
And before we move on, I should mention that we did extend an invitation to our other Bay Area District Attorney, San Francisco District Attorney Cheza Boudin, but we were told that he's not available tonight. Of course, we invite him to come on anytime. We hope to have him on very, very soon. So let's talk about San Francisco in the Bay Area. You know, I often talk about my family who live in a red state and are part of the Trump base, and they always post for me on social media. And the truth is that San Francisco and the Bay Area have become sort of a trope or a meme for the extreme right. I mean, you see every day the posts that say, here's a picture of San Francisco, or here's a picture of Oakland. This is what happens when socialism takes over. Now, I didn't get that email. I don't know when socialism took over. It seems to me that we're one of the most capitalist areas in the world, but they do have some pretty disturbing pictures about people that, you know, we've seen in life. We've seen the people shooting up around the federal courthouse. We know about the rise in crime. We know about flash mobs and flash and grab thefts, which have become huge fodder for the media. What's behind all this? How did we get here? And what are we going to do about it?
You know, I mentioned District Attorney Jeff Rosen, and Dean and I had the opportunity to speak with him a few hours ago. He can't be here to join us tonight, but he wanted you to hear from him. So if we could cue that up, you'll hear a bit from him, and then we'll return.
So, Jeffrey, you know, you deal with this every day. The big picture, crime in the United States was very low from about 1991 till around 2016. And now the crime rates, homicides, thefts across the board are up. You deal with this stuff every day. What's behind the sudden rise in crime rates?
Well, it's hard to point to one factor. Things that cause crime to increase or decrease are often based on a number of factors, demographics, policing, and, situations involving employment or pandemics, as we've experienced recently. So what I can say in terms of recent crime increases over the last year or two in Santa Clara County and around the country, a lot of that is driven by the disruptions from COVID. And you had a situation where for several months, the whole economy was locked down. And you saw decreases in a lot of types of crime because of that. There was just less economic activity, people not leaving their homes. As things have started to open up, whether it's businesses, malls, bars, restaurants, crime has come back to where it was and has increased. Certainly violent crime has increased. And in some sense, that we might think of that as like the pent-up demand for a lot of things that has happened because of the pandemic.
Well, we listen to our listeners, and I've got to tell you, they, over the last couple of weeks, have been incensed. And the theme has been, well, it's just the liberalization of the criminal justice system. They've reduced felonies to misdemeanors. They've eliminated the felony theft law. They're letting people out on zero bail. And that's not me saying that. That's our audience. Is there any truth to that?
I don't think that's what's driving the increases we've seen in crime. The laws that we have, many of the laws are quite stiff. If they're applied, if those crimes are prosecuted, if those individuals are caught. But if individuals aren't caught or crimes aren't prosecuted vigorously, then you do lose some deterrent value in that. I think that the idea that if we make the punishment for a crime greater or smaller, it will automatically have an effect on that crime being committed. I don't think the data bears that out. But what I can say, because I don't really like to talk that much about data, that's not why I became a prosecutor, is I've always been aware of crimes committed because I prosecuted these crimes. But I think that when the public sees crimes committed on television, like groups of people in an organized fashion overwhelming department stores and stealing thousands of dollars and running away and knocking people down, it incenses people and it makes them angry and makes me angry. And then I want to do everything I can to find those people and hold them accountable and reestablish what I think are the appropriate social norms. You don't take something that doesn't belong to you, period. That's it. It doesn't belong to you. You don't take it. You don't have a right to it.
You know, the media has painted some of these things as if it's a dance mob or a flash mob that spontaneously acts. Does it appear to be spontaneous, or is there something more insidious, more organized going on?
Yeah, this is not, no. This is not, you know, a dance mob like on the Tracy Ullman show or something like this, which is sort of silly. This is completely organized. This is fences, individuals and that want certain goods, and they give lists of those goods to other individuals to go out and steal. And the criminals that are doing this, this is like a job for them. They go out every day, steal purses, break into stores. At the end of the day, take the goods to the fences, who then turn around and sell those goods all over the country. I mean, some of the things that you're buying online on Amazon and other retailers are things that have been stolen, if it's a particular electronics, wiped clean and resold in both this country and overseas. So this is highly organized. You know, to get 30 or 40 people to gather at one place and overwhelm the store takes a degree of organization and sophistication, and requires a commensurate law enforcement response to combat it.
So this is organized. This is sophisticated. This is innovation in the world of crime.
Absolutely.
And you're angry about it, which is great and which is encouraging. So now that you're good and angry, and now that the people, your constituency, is good and angry, what are you guys doing about it?
So what we're doing is tracking down all of the individuals involved in these crimes and prosecuting them vigorously. Here's how we approach this problem in a few ways. Number one, in our county, we've had a crime strategies unit in the DA's office since 2016. And the crime strategies unit does a number of things, one of which is it gathers information from all of the law enforcement agencies all over the county and all over the Bay Area. And we meet for the last 6 years. One of the things the crime strategy unit has done is organized monthly meetings with representatives of all the police departments in our county, specifically about burglaries or robbery crews that are coming into our county from other places and robbing and stealing. So those monthly meetings, we focus on sharing information in real time through the use of, for instance, license plate readers is a good example, through public education and prevention. We've trained a number of loss prevention officers at many of the retailers in our county. We've talked to them about how to put cameras in, where to put cameras, the use of license plate readers. And then number three, we focus on the fences. There is a market for the stolen goods. This is capitalism. What's driving this is you go out on a day, you hit three or four different stores, you take that, you give it to someone. They give you several hundred dollars or a few thousand dollars. They turn around and resell it. But those individual fences, those are the keys to uncovering these operations. And so we focused on prosecuting fences, both in our county and around the state. And that's helped us to dismantle these organizations. And I should just say, the phenomenon you're seeing of the smash and grabs is just a different manifestation of what these robbery crews have been doing. So for several months ago, it was catalytic converters and stealing thousands of catalytic converters. In addition, it's been purse snatching of Asian women walking around, malls and other places. So we've taken this approach and we've applied it to the smash and grabs that we've seen. And we're having success, but I don't want people to think that I'm complacent about it. I mean, when I turn on the TV and see it, that pisses me off.
One of the things that you mentioned is dismantling these units from throughout the state. And it appears to me that some of these groups are crossing traditional borders in order to make it that much harder to find them. Is there any type of networking that's taking place between either police agencies or prosecution agencies so that eventually they will thwart the ability of folks to do that?
Yeah, the fact is the the internet and social media has allowed criminals to organize and move across jurisdictional lines even easier than before. But law enforcement is also quite organized, and I think that we're even more organized. And the truth is the way that we are able to dismantle the networks is because we're sharing our information more quickly, more thoroughly, and then following up with pretty vigorous prosecutions. The goods, we've chased fences all the way to Vietnam. Several months ago, we were on a call with prosecutors and police officers in Vietnam about laptops that had been stolen from people's cars that wound up in Vietnam. And in identifying those fences in Vietnam and dismantling that operation overseas, it led to a decrease in the auto break-ins and stealing of laptops from cars in our county.
And that leads us into the conversation that we will continue next week when we're talking about where we go from here, hopeful signs in the future and things that we can do. So I'd like to thank you for joining us this evening. I appreciate that while you couldn't join us live this evening, we had the chance this afternoon to have this conversation, and I look forward to continuing it.
It was very nice talking to you. I look forward to speaking with you next week.
Thanks, Jeffrey. See you next week.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in the San Francisco Bay Area. 2 weeks ago, we began a discussion about a year that began and ended with all the unprecedented challenges to our democracy, to our economy, to the very social fabric that holds us together. In particular, we've been taking a look at this region, the country, the world, and asking, are the guardrails coming off? Tonight, I'm joined by co-host NBC legal and political analyst Dean Johnson, and my guest tonight, you've just heard from Jeff Rosen of Santa Clara County. I have with me defense attorneys Kevin Allen and Damone Hale, and District Attorney Nancy O'Malley. Who better to discuss such troubling developments? Why, that would be you, of course. If you have questions for my guests or simply want to share your experiences, our phone number in the San Francisco Bay Area, 415-841-4134. If you're outside the local dialing area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. Dean.
So, you know, I'd like to follow up on what the DA of Silicon Valley had to say and throw this open to our panel. Is Jeff Rosen right? Is this just a matter of criminals becoming more organized, or is there something deeper here? Is there a political or a cultural element to this rise in crime that we're seeing?
Hey, Dean, before I know the other speakers have so much to say on this, I just to your point there, when you went with the cultural and political, one thing that upset me, and it really upset me during this last series of protests, so many people came at me, oh my gosh, if the protesters just weren't looting. And I wanted people to understand that generally, and I speak generally, there is a huge gap between those that are out protesting and those that are looting. This whole flash mob, rob thing has been going on. It's been going on for years. It's been going on since the 90s. The organizations got better. What people were doing and what they have been doing over the past series of a decade or so is when there is a protest, they use there's individuals that use the umbrella of the protest to go out. They're opportunists, and nothing upsets me more. And I feel that the people that are actually going out and looting are detracting from the message that people are trying to send with the protest, and they're causing people to mash it all together. People are upset with the protesters. They don't realize people are going to protest. I stand behind the protesters. In fact, in times there might be, you know, damage and property damage. And that part I understand, because that may be anger that's welling up. But I hope that people truly understand that there is a division between opportunistic looters that are going out and doing this when the police are distracted, when people are distracted and stealing, and people that are actually presenting a true message.
Yeah, you know, Kevin, it's funny the labels we sometimes see. I talking about my red state friends, people who they watch a Black Lives Matter demonstration. Of course, all of those demonstrators are rioters and looters. But apparently, if you demonstrate at the nation's capital and storm the capital, you're just a tourist.
Exactly. And yeah. the thing is, you know, there's a difference between the various protesters you mentioned, because there's peaceful, nonviolent, civil disobedience, and then there's people who are being civilly or uncivilly disobedient. But the point being is the looters really have nothing to do with the protest. There's no correlation between, but people can't help but look at it lately and say, oh my gosh, because of the politics and because of the liberals and because of this, and it's not a liberal, it's not a red, it's not a conservative thing. These are opportunistic criminals that are taking advantage of situations. And right now it's technology. They're learning, just as Jeff was saying, they need to share information. These people can share information at the speed of light, and they understand that the laws and the policies of stores, people can go in. The stores are telling folks the liability is high. Don't interact with them. And people are taking advantage. That's in my opinion, is what is happening.
You know, let me turn this to Nancy and Damone. Jeff Rosen seemed to suggest that the answer is really just more efficient law enforcement. Crime has become more organized, so the police ought to become more organized. Is that the answer?
Well, you know, my experience, no, that is not the answer alone. When we're talking about crime, we have, I think, at least I approach it from three different aspects. You obviously have prevention, intervention, and you have suppression. And we need suppression. That's a part of our mix. The question is we rely too much on suppression. here, you know, I was amused by the DA's response about data, because we now, you know, the buzzword is data driven, you know, and if we're not looking at the numbers and seeing whether, you know, crime is going down, or I didn't understand what he meant by that. That being said, San Francisco, I want to use an example. You know, they want to shut down the juvenile hall because the policies that were set reduced not only recidivism, but the numbers in custody, so that the powers be, and I disagree with that recommendation, but the powers that be believe that it's not cost effective. The reason we were able to switch from a detention-based model to a community supervision model was because we put in place the resources necessary to be successful. So some of you may know James Bell, incredible brother. But what his research showed was that if we have kids that are stealing, then we should have job employment training. We should have after school jobs for them, because these kids, when they're idle, they're going to get into mess. Now, let's apply that to the adult system. The change in California, I think in 2012, was that we moved from a purely penal system. Punishment, I told all my clients back before the change, look, the adult system is about punishment. If we can get some other good things going, great. But I want you to understand this system. Well, the legislators changed that. They said that incarceration as a goal is not working in California. So they legislatively said, we are now looking at rehabilitation, all the things that we focused on our young people. How do we do that now? I think it's the local communities. I've been working in Bayview. You said San Francisco. I've been working in Bayview for 30 years. I know the folks. I can get in there and I can talk smack. They know where I'm coming from. I'm not just a lawyer. So we have to have people that are close to the ground if we really want to have a change. Now, we can change the folks in say, Alameda. I work in Alameda. I work in San Francisco. Taught at Oakland Tech. You know, I'm from Compton. So this is my community that I'm concerned about. So if we put the right people in place with suppression, because you got to have a hammer, I'm going to tell you, my mom's belt stopped me from doing a lot of bad things coming up. I'm glad we don't have people in our Kool-Aid like we did when I was coming up. I'm 62. So I think there's a combination, a balance. I think we do need to be data driven. I think we ought to be looking closely at the numbers. I know I was looking at census every month at Juvenile Hall. Why do we have people, youth of color? And in San Francisco, it was just African-Americans that were overrepresented in the youth population. And so we focus like a laser on changing that condition. And we have, we just need to continue that at the local base. You know, too many people, and this is my last thing. These commissions, now you see people running for all the school boards, et cetera, that's where it happens. But you cannot put on these boards folks who want to be politicians. And that's what I see too often. People who want to just do the work, good work, like working with Ms. O'Malley. I can tell you with the chief of juvenile probation, we had an incredible relationship because we had the community connected. And we had a chief that understood the policy changes that he thought we needed to make. So we were able to have a conversation that was healthy and productive. And we got rid of all of the tropes. Because people, you know, I tell folks, when I'm in trouble, I call 911. Period. Now, if I have to kick somebody's butt on the stand, you know, that's what I do. But anyway, my two cents.
Let me take... pass it to Bill in Daly City. Bill, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I'd like the panel to address the common trope you see on social media these days that these crimes can be justified, even the flash mob crimes, because they're crimes of survival or crimes of need.
Necessity defense.
I'm happy to jump in on this one.
Please do.
So what we know, I think Jeff Rosen said this very, very clearly, is that when we look at these flash mobs or this organized retail theft, these are not people that are stealing food because they're hungry. They're not people who are, you know, who don't have some other way to make money. You know, we see in these flash mobs, I hate to call it that, we see this massive group of people who commit the acts at the same time, that they're coming in and out in nice cars. And so I really think that this argument about this is just trying to balance out the score is not legitimate when we're talking about the type of crime that we're seeing more. There's no question that there are people who are engaging in what the law would say is criminal, but they need housing, they need food, they need shelter, they need clothes. You know, and I think that at least I'll speak for my office, and I know the Bay Area is so, that we have a lot of programs to support people like that. We don't want that in the criminal justice system. We want people to be able to live a respectful life that they feel like they're not constantly in survival mode. But what we're seeing is much more organized, much more sophisticated. When 80 people show up at the same time and park in the same place with their license plates covered, that's not a survival or trying to balance the score. And, you know, we do know that there's a crime strategy that's being done. As Jeff Rosen said, we had a case, a very big case, where the people used to go in and smash and grab at the Apple store or other stores like that. And then Apple started bringing on more security, and these other stores like Best Buy, everyone started bringing security. So this group of individuals, they would follow the FedEx trucks that were delivering the product to the stores, and they would rob the FedEx delivery person at the sidewalk. And they were motivated by the fact that they collected all of this product, and then they were able to sell it to a fence. The fence, when we went in and the police went in and arrested him, had $1 million cash in his house. And that product, those products were heading to Vietnam. And Vietnam has been a hotspot for computers that are stolen and other technology, including catalytic converters, which were being sent to Vietnam and other places like that. So I do want to say one thing, and that is just to really echo what the Moan was saying about, you know, bringing community in to help people move beyond their engagement in criminal justice. I think that we have a lot of people who are down and out, who are just trying to survive the day. And unfortunately, for many of the people who are involved in or have drug addictions or other type of mental health issues, that, you know, those are individuals that we as community are trying to create an environment where they can be safe and they can be taken care of and get the services that they need. So I really make a differentiation between people who are really struggling and people who are engaged in the more recent crime that we've seen, and especially in the huge increase in gun violence. You know, we talk with our violence interrupters in Oakland, and we do a lot around gun violence prevention and gun violence safe storage. People lock up their guns and things like that so they don't end up in the wrong hands. But we're seeing the gun violence increase, and some of it is through gangs. Some of it is that everybody has a gun in their hand.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for Your Legal Rights and KALW is provided in part by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your particular situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. And a reminder that this show is better with your participation. If you'd like to contribute to the conversation, give us a call at 415-841-4134, or if you're outside of the area, 866-798-8255. Now back to Jeff and his guests.
So while we were on air, I was handed a copy of a publication of the San Francisco Police Officers Association, and it quotes that in San Francisco and Oakland alone, they're estimating the cost of business at approximately $3.6 billion, according to the California Retailers Association. Do you think that estimate has merit?
Is in terms of loss?
Yes.
Well, I can tell you that we work very closely with the business associations throughout Alameda County, and they're suffering. I mean, COVID was a big hit, of course, as Jeff Rosen said, but having to deal with the street level crime and affecting their businesses, it's putting people out of business because of the loss. And I don't know. I think that I don't know. Who knows? I mean, we have to look at data, like Mom was saying. We look at the data to see if $3 billion is a correct number. But we know that it's not just the dollars and cents. It's the keeping people away from going downtown. It's keeping people away from the parks or the street for fear of being robbed. Certainly, it shut down Chinatown in Oakland when there were so many assaults against Asian and Chinese, especially elder folks, including one individual who ended up being killed. And so I think that there is absolutely an impact on the business community with the level of crime.
You know, I'd like to follow up on what Nancy was saying and to a certain extent what Jeff Rosen was saying. Granted, we're seeing these flash mobs that are highly organized, and there's been a quantum leap in the organization of crime. But aren't we also seeing in the Bay Area a rise in what we might call disorganized crime? I mean, we're talking about shootings, robberies, drug addiction, that whole spectrum of attacks on particularly on ethnic groups, particularly on Asians lately. Is there something deeper going on there? What's the source of that? Is that the rising inequality in the Bay Area, people's just mass frustration, the pandemic? What's behind that?
Well, one thing I will say, what small part of it is that we've seen, especially with these jump out of a car, do a robbery, jump back in the car and you're gone, or walk down the street, rob someone and then be gone. We've seen that being committed by younger people. And, you know, during COVID, these kids were not in school. And school is a place where kids are, during the day. And we know that for many kids, the most dangerous time is after school and before people get home from work. Not just of kids engaging in criminal behavior, but also kids becoming victims of crime. And so that's one of the things that we've seen, this younger population who have seen it happen with older people that may be more organized, but why not? And I'm out of school and bored. I have nothing to do. I don't have any money, whatever the motivation is. And the other part of it is that, you know, there, the crimes against Asian individuals I think it was just a manifestation of opportunity that culturally that especially older Asians are not likely to call the police. They're likely to go home and isolate in their home because they're not from a culture where the police were friends or were protectors. But I also think that it's just, it was not unique to Asian culture. It was, we've had several cases. We have over 3,000 Asian people who were victims of crime, serious crime. But we see this happening in our communities of against many different ethnicities, African-American, Muslim. And so, you know, I think that we look at this and we address it as a crime against a culture, not just one particular individual culture.
The Japanese side of me is speaking. Long before the pandemic, Asians were being targeted, for example, in San Francisco. Anybody at practice, if I said San Bruno Avenue, everyone's going to know exactly what I'm talking about. And the individuals, when you look at the data, the folks that are being robbed are older, generally older women. You don't see young Asian men being targeted. And so you just look and you go, okay, they're being victimized. They've been targeted. But then when you're looking at young people, it's generally economic driven. So the question becomes, again, who is going to be courageous enough? Because we were in San Francisco. We had an incredible commission. And I was the lightweight. One is now a federal judge, Chuck Breyers. So these individuals were focused on not only the policies we were developing, but the data to make sure we were on track. So who's going to be courageous enough with young adults? Because again, our inclination as in the adult system is to punish. You heard Jeff Rosen. I like Jeff. Before he was DA, I've had a couple of cases and just an incredible person and very empathetic. I'd never thought, you know, he was not the kind of DA that was just, I thought was just closed off to any kind of conversation. But you have to have someone that talks more than just suppression. So intervention, if we have young people, and if we believe that they should be given as much support to get on the right track, then we have to have courageous DAs. One of the things we learned through the Annie Casey Foundation, that our criminal justice systems are driven by our DAs and our judges. Everybody else, we play a role, but those two roles, and that's what happened in San Francisco. Catherine Feinstein for the court and Jesse Williams, our chief, was the reason we had the changes. Now, the community came along because they saw, wait a minute, the judge is on our side. The chief of juvenile probation is coming out to the community regularly. We changed the dynamic, and we need a courageous DA. I'm looking at one that, you know, changes the narrative and the way we talk. So, 2 cents.
You know, let me just pose something, and I'm sure I'm going to get pushback on this. Is part of this just that people are so frustrated with the way they've been treated as individuals? You know, I think about fights on airplanes, for example. You know, that's the big thing in media now, that the passengers are acting up. But we all forget about the months and months of stories of airline delays, people sitting on runways for 7 and 8 hours. We forget the story about the Berkeley professor who was forcibly dragged off of an airplane. And are people just reacting to that? I have said, I can remember going into my drugstore and talking to the manager when everything was locked up in the drugstore and you had to wait for a clerk to come and unlock the thing so you could get your razor so you could shave. And I remember saying to a manager, you know what, if you treat your customers like thieves, eventually they're all going to become thieves. And lo and behold, is part of this just that people are frustrated with the way they're being treated? Is that part of not only this, but what we're now calling the Great Resignation, where people are saying, you know, I'm treated so poorly by my employers and my customers, I've had it, I'm done. I mean, are we just experiencing a kind of mass phenomenon like the old movie Network, where people are saying, I'm just mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore?
Well, Dean, if I can, just real brief, and I know Nancy and Damone, they're kind of the hitters on this one, but, you know, Jeff said something earlier. We were all raised, if something isn't ours, we don't take it. And you know, Nancy mentioned too that it's not this economic kind of need driven situation. There are people that are hungry. Trust me, there's an economic divide, and I'm sure people are frustrated, and that's probably something that's carried over since the 50s and the 60s, you know, where people feel that I need to catch up. I was not given something. But as Nance mentioned, and as Damone's talking, a lot of this is driven by a higher up. There are people who are organizing this, and they're taking advantage of others who are out here, who have the idle time, who do need the money and are pushing back. But this is organized by, like you said, fences, just like with prostitution. You can take all the Johns and the ladies off the street, but they're going to be replaced by other Johns and other ladies on the street. You need to address those people that are running the rings, that are setting this up. And that's part of that is what's happening here. And it's dangerous to say these people are pushing back, because then we get into, look at those folks, they protest, they kneel, they do this, and they start to categorize folks. Okay, it's those people that are causing these problems, and it's not. And I refuse, I being a part of the community, I refuse to have the people that are out there trying to right the balance of society, whether it's, you know, racism, the slavery back in the day, whatever, I refuse to have them drug into this conversation of, oh, they're also frustrated, and so now they're just out there taking and going against their morals. I was raised by a mother with a belt. I was like Damone. My daughter is funny. My daughter in a restaurant asked about spanking so much. I turned to another brother beside me and said, were you spanked? And he looked at my daughter and said, please quit asking about it, because somebody may do this to you. Do not ask. But it's what got me into law school. Those are my principles. And I think that we have that in the community. And it's not, I don't want our community to be cast as this group that, okay, we're frustrated, so we're turning to crime. I refuse to do that.
I think it's a little bit more sinister. I think the opposition now knows that as long as they put some infiltrators in there and they start some fights at these rallies, we're going to be criticized for it. Do we stop? Because that's not going to stop. They're going to use the media they have. They're experts at it. And the only thing we can do is locally. I know that if I go to Allen Temple, for example, I know Miss O'Malley's shaking her head because she knows that institution. And I know J. Alfred Smith, my frat brother. This is the kind of relationships that makes changes, and all the rhetoric. You know, if there's enough brothers at the rallies, and I'm talking about our Greek brothers, et cetera, and we're organized, soon as we see somebody about to break a window. Now, this is what people have been talking about. You know, Dr. King says, you know, if you're not willing to die for something, and we are at a point, we've had people who have been killed because they're trying to make changes. And so here we've got to be willing, when we are protesting Black Lives Matter, that when we see somebody about to do something, we go surround them. We make sure that is unacceptable. But, you know, that's easier said than done. When I got out to Bayview, I had to learn a whole lot, even though I'm from Compton. I had to shut up, because I would have ended up a victim, because I would have went out there without the right knowledge of how to communicate with my own community. So we got work.
And I would just like to add one thing, that a lot of the people who are being impacted and hurt by crime are people from the same community. And, you know, I know we do a lot of work with throughout Oakland, of course. But a lot of the people that are just working to make ends meet, who are trying to raise their kids, they're also being impacted by whatever's going on, by this sort of lawlessness that has taken over. And I think that when COVID first hit, the streets were empty. And at least in Oakland, what it looked like was that the gangs were rising up because the streets were empty. There was nobody to witness or to stop. And a lot of the gun violence was between gangs. And so we just, you know, I think we have to pay attention to the whole community. And I agree with both what Kevin and Damone are saying, that, you know, we have the opportunity. Now, there's some people committing serious crimes, and we have to address that. I mean, right now we've got, I think, over 3,000 cases that are pending of very serious crimes. But we have a whole lot of people that can, if given the right direction, like you guys were talking about your mom with the belt. I grew up in an Irish family with 9 kids. We had a belt too. But you know what? The thing is that one of the things that we're seeing now is that we have people, young people coming into the criminal justice system here who haven't finished high school, haven't had a good support system. They don't have any skills to get a job. And so what else are they supposed to do? So our programs really guide them into the opportunity. And it isn't just, we think you need this. It's what do you need so that we can help support you to get to that point where you have your pathway out of criminal justice. And we've just finished a 3-year study. So this, I am a data person. And this 3-year study focused on individuals who had prior felony convictions, who committed new felony crimes that they were charged with. And we had a control group and a group that we focused on through, it's called Justice Restoration, Alameda County Justice Restoration. The percentage of people in the JRP group, the reduction of recidivism was remarkable. Whereas the other individuals who didn't have that individual attention, didn't have the coaching, didn't have somebody who actually looked like they cared about them, which they did, because they're all people with lived experience who had been through the criminal justice system, who are now hired by me to work with individuals coming in. The other group, you know, still were challenged. And we'll see when the report comes out what the data actually ends up with. But if we make the investment in people that didn't have it earlier, or nobody was there to guide them, and nobody was there, like what you're talking about at a protest where somebody wants to throw rocks through the window and break all the windows and nobody's stopping them. Nobody told them that's not cool for this protest. This is an important message, whatever. That I think that that's a place where I think the using incarceration to try to control behavior or to change behavior is not going to necessarily be effective, but investing in people in ways that we can will be.
One of the things that we missed in 2008, 2009, when the government's budgets were cut because of the recession we were in, one of the things that we lost were the juvenile diversion programs. And a lot of those programs got a lot of criticism because people thought they were built on leniency. But the truth is, they were meant as a way to reach out to kids in the community before they were breaking into your garage, before they were breaking into cars, when maybe they were missing a couple of classes or they were just showing signs of being at risk to go off the rails. And they dealt with them in a much more positive way, but early on. And those were extraordinarily effective. Nancy, have you had any inkling that some of those things are coming back, or are those really of another era?
I think there's a real awakening right now around criminal justice. And, you know, it was when Jerry Brown was governor the first time that he added R to CDC, and it was supposed to become rehabilitated. I think now that, you know, since we have this, we went from this bottom to now rebuilding our system, and continuing to look at our system and rebuild to the extent we can, that we've actually, in many respects, made advancements that are helping people to move away from criminal justice. And I think that old lock 'em up, everybody, if you're a criminal, you're a criminal forever, that's gone. There are a lot of people who have been in prison who have done remarkable work and have earned their way back out to the community. I think it takes commitment. I'll say that. It takes commitment. It can't just be a good idea. We have to get people to dig their heels in and really be there to help out people when they need that help.
You know, it's hard to believe, but we're nearing the end of the hour, and I wanted to give each of you a couple minutes for any closing thoughts you might have. Kevin Allen, you've done this drill with me a few times. How would you like to start?
Well, before, and I think it's really important. David asked a question, and I think for a lot of people listening, when they see these situations going on, they're lost and they're not sure what to do. He asked a great question in the chat that I would love for Nancy to address. If you see something like this going on, and if you intervene, what could happen?
We're talking about the guy with the pepper spray that isn't involved in the situation, but as a citizen, should he be stepping up?
Well, and what the question also says is the individual who's engaging in the behavior is looting or smashing and grabbing. So that's a property crime. And if somebody uses pepper spray on a person that not for the purpose of self-defense or defense of others, then it's an assault. So it's not for the general public to be the police officers. I mean, right now we have a lot of people that take pictures with their phone to try to get it. But we really, when I go out and speak to the community, I talk about it's don't jump in the middle of this because you don't know what you're jumping into. And if you're not trained to deal with a situation that can be combative, you may end up getting hurt or killed worse. So I think that in this particular case, it's not for the it's a property crime. It's not for the protection, self-defense, or defense of others, that would be an assault.
Thank you. I really wanted Nancy I wanted people to hear that so people understood that while it upsets them, you have to leave this up to, you have to leave it up to law enforcement. And do we need to work with law? Yes, law enforcement, we need to revamp and change the way some things are done, as Damone was saying, but we don't want anybody stepping in the middle of this. My two cents, Jeff, and I'll be done. Damone mentioned a lot with community, and I've had this discussion with Damone, and he has put me in check a lot. But, you know, we have a responsibility as well. As we talked about the parents and the parents with the belts and whatnot, these idle kids, the people that are out there, just as we want the professionals who are willing to work with the community has to know that, okay, somebody wants to help us. We need to step up. It's the churches. Allen Temple, my aunt sang at Allen Temple for years. She was a mainstay. It was the churches that disseminated information to the communities. It was the churches that enforced rules in communities. We're losing those institutions, and we need those institutions back. We need those folks working with the people who aren't just giving lip service, saying to these kids, don't follow that person with $1 million in their house because they don't care about you. They'll cut you off at the limbs, the knees, and leave you out there. And so it takes a community to make a change. And I think that's what the folks have been saying. And so I stand behind that. That's my two cents.
And for the remaining guests, we're down to about a minute. Damone, would you like to jump in next?
Yeah, if we're going to change things, you know, everybody's complaining about the government. I think the government is working just out how it's supposed to. Clumsy, inefficient. It requires people, us, communities. If we want our kids to grow up respectful, then we got to put time and energy in them. They have to see us. When kids see their parents in the stands and they're cheering for them, that gives them such a sense of identity, of belonging. And we have too many who feel like they don't belong. So I think if there's one thing I can say, everybody, you got to engage. There's no easy way out. And don't listen too much to those folks from Washington because they don't know what goes on in Oakland or Bayview. They don't know Alan Temple like Nancy does. And so we have to rely on us. And I think now we're starting to organize more.
And if there's one thing I learned, keep your kids engaged. Idle hands are the devil's playground. Nancy?
Thank you. I just, first of all, thank you for the show. I think that, as Jeff Rosen said at the beginning, that when there's an act that's done that's against the law, there's a consequence. And the consequence, there should be a consequence. And I think that's what the general public is frustrated about. They see something happen, they hear about crime, and nothing happens. And COVID has really hindered our ability to engage people personally because of COVID, and the courts and the jails have to keep the population down and things like that. But at the end of the day, there are way more people that if we engage with them, if we invest in them, that they will, recidivism will stop. And that's worth $1 million.
Thank you, Nancy. And Dean, would you like to take about a minute?
Just very quickly, this was an awesome dialogue. I learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners did. And the thing I heard recited over and over again was the word community. And I think that's the takeaway from this show tonight. We know from the recession of 2008, it was the small businesses and the small banks who knew their customers as individuals that survived and kept the community going. Charles Silberman, the great sociologist, wrote a book called Criminal Violence, Criminal Justice, and he proved exactly what our panel has said, which is that even if you correct for income levels and poverty and everything else, the kids that survive and don't commit the crimes of violence are the ones that have support from their families, from their schools, from their churches. That's where our guardrails come from. And if our guardrails are going to stay on in this society, it's going to be the community that does it.
And thank you for that. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Our guests tonight have been District Attorneys Jeff Rosen from Santa Clara County and Nancy O'Malley from Alameda County, and defense attorneys Kevin Allen and Timone Hale. Tonight's show was produced by Dean Johnson and yours truly. Next week, we hope to bring you part 3 of our discussion, Have the Guardrails Come Off? And we plan to change the tone. We're looking for signs of hope. You heard some of the seeds laid for that tonight. Next week, we hope we show you the other side, where things are looking forward and how to move to a better place. Our guest will include some of the folks you heard from here tonight, and local elected officials and candidates, where we're going to be asking them what they plan to do to secure our guardrails and put us back on the right track and hopefully save not only our economy but our democracy. Thanks to tonight's co-host, Dean Johnson. A big thanks to our guests tonight for joining us. It's been most enlightening. And especially our thanks to all of you for listening in. And at the controls, my friend David LaTulippe, I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and have a good night.
Support for KLW is provided in part by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your particular situation. Call 415-989-1616. That number again, 415-989-1616, or visit sfbar.org for more information.